And good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live here out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser, and welcome aboard on this beautiful Thursday morning in Tucson, Arizona, broadcasting to all of Tucson and Southern Arizona. Here's the show, and we'll jump right in because time is ticking and the conversation is plenty to be had this morning. Now, looking forward to chatting with Ruben Navarrete here in just a second, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country and host of Ruben in the Center. You may have seen him or read his work in The Washington Post, USA Today, Daily Beast, Fox News, CNN, the list goes on. And it's always an honor to have him on the program. He looks at national issues and brings them here locally to us. On the other side of that conversation, we're going to get to have our first talk with someone from the Arizona Commerce Authority, Kevin Gillette here in Tucson. We're going to talk about if talent drives all market decisions, if companies coming and staying means that they're looking at can they find the workforce. How do we stack up in Tucson? What does the ACA do? How are we doing? We'll have that conversation on the other side as we look to grow our economy post-COVID here in the region. Without further ado, let's welcome on in our first guest. Ruben, good morning to you. Welcome aboard.
Good morning, Zach. Great to be back with you.
As always. So I read this yesterday, and I think it resonates with me, and I think it will resonate with you, Ruben. We need more people willing to take issues that have become food fights and turn them back into the principal debate and discussion they deserve. That's certainly what I try to do. And you and I check in on a weekly basis ahead of these conversations. And my question usually is, what's on your mind, Ruben? And among the many topics you cover, one that you've especially been looking at, as have many of us and as we have on the show, is this phrase that has become a kind of a cultural zeitgeist, if you will, critical race theory. I have some questions. And we're trying to kind of parse through this and go, what's really the conversation we're having here? But you're covering this, you're watching this, you're having conversations. What's going on with this, Ruben?
So weeks ago when I started hearing conservatives, even before the outcome of the Virginia governor's race, when I started hearing conservatives on places like the Hugh Hewitt Show and others, shows that I listen to regularly, talk about critical race theory, particularly those with any kind of legal background, I knew something was amiss. I knew that this was one of those cases where, and both parties do this, the right and the left, Democrats and Republicans, will sometimes short-circuit a conversation, go for that shortcut, and try to summarize what something is unfairly, untruthfully, and that's what's happened here. But then you had the Virginia governor's race turn out, and you saw that critical race theory and that phrase being bandied about has helped elect Glenn Youngkin, because for a lot of folks, and I gather this, for a lot of white folks, critical race theory means anything that is uncomfortable or uneasy for them. Anything that inconveniences them having to do with race. It's this huge umbrella that I now know, listening to Hugh Hewitt and others, that encompasses things like affirmative action. Anything having to do with race at all goes under critical race theory. That's the fast track to crazy town. That doesn't make sense. It's not logical. In fact, critical race theory means something very specific. It means this. In the 1970s, a group of Asian, African American, Latino law professors, including and led by Derrick Bell at Harvard, came up with this idea that somehow the civil rights movement had not gone far enough because the civil rights movement had promised a kind of color blindness. And they decided in the 70s, you know what, we really need to be more color conscious and discuss race, not ignore race. You know, if you have a cancer, you treat the cancer, you don't ignore it. Fast forward from the 1970s, 20 years really, until it's incorporated into law school curriculum. And somehow it migrated from the law school, you'll find this part interesting, Zach, it migrates from the law schools to the schools of education. And once it does that, that's where they're training the teachers and the administrators at the K-12 level, and now it is at your local public school in some cases. But what I was struck by is both parties have no compunction about lying, outright lying, to win an election like they did in Virginia. And that's what Republicans did over CRT, critical race theory, this thing that everybody hates and nobody can explain?
You know, I can't remember if we've talked about it on the show, but I've certainly said on this issue, because again, I'm looking to take an issue that's become a food fight and turn it back into a principled discussion, and we can figure out how we move forward as a country out of this moment, because that's what's important. You know, but my aha moment, Ruben, was watching Whoopi Goldberg on The View host a conversation on critical race theory and say we need to be teaching history in schools. And I thought to myself, and by the way, I have teacher friends who would identify on the left side of the spectrum, would identify as progressive democratic, say, we got to teach history in school. That's why CRT is important. I don't think those two things are the same. I mean, to me, and I don't want to oversimplify it, there is history, and then there is this framework through which these professors said we should look at history. But those are two different things.
Yeah.
In fact, Ruben, I found it interesting that in a recent poll, 74% of white Americans and 75% of black Americans favor teaching students in school that the dispute over slavery was the principal cause of the Civil War. Americans of most stripes agree that schools should be teaching about racism and the horrors of slavery. That's not really what we're talking about, is it?
Well, here's the thing. And again, both sides do it, right? This lying happens in the best of families. If you're Whoopi Goldberg and the Democrats, you want to make this simply about teaching the full history, the full historical picture, which has never really been done. Take it from somebody who majored in American history in college. But if you're on the right, you want to say it's somehow what critical race theory is it teaches white kids that they're always the oppressor. It teaches black kids that they're always the victims. And it says basically that this is an opportunity to get even with black. Black people can get even with white people through critical race theory. And we'll learn all about white privilege, and you'll make a bunch of white kids feel guilty. Well, that's another oversimplification, right? So as far as I'm concerned, Hugh Hewitt on the right is oversimplifying this issue. He ought to know better. And Whoopi Goldberg on the left, same thing. The truth is, and the only way to do this is to go out and talk to law professors of color, which I did for my column recently. I interviewed Randy Candy, African-American professor at Harvard Law School, who taught me when I took his course as an undergrad at the law school. And I interviewed Laura Gomez, who's an old classmate of mine as well, who teaches at UCLA School of Law and created the critical race studies program there. And here's what they tell me critical race theory is. They say instead of looking at, gee, in the American South, you may have had, say, for instance, racist police officers in Mississippi and elsewhere, we know this. Instead of saying this was just an isolated incident of individuals, maybe we should look at systemic policing, systemic racism in policing in Mississippi in the 60s. Maybe. Maybe instead of looking in a specific one-off, maybe there are patterns to be looked at that can be applied generally and broadly. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but as soon as it goes into politics, both the right and the left start ginning this up. Let me just lastly say the reason my column was so provocative, my wife believes in reincarnation. She wants to come back as a dolphin. Not me, brother. I want to come back as a white male. Okay, as a Mexican-American, I want to come back as a white male. And the reason is I am in awe of the fact like that people like Christopher Rofo at the Manhattan Institute, the fellow there who started all of this, Hugh Hewitt, Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, can, as white men, run in, charge in to subject matters they know nothing about and still opine freely. I am in awe of that. I'm impressed. Because when I don't know about a topic like climate change, you know, I shut the hell up. But the very fact that white men have no compunction or hesitation at all about talking about things they do not understand, like critical race theory, I mean, color me impressed.
See, Ruben, I think really you want to come back as a politician. That's what I'm hearing. You really want to come back as a politician.
Who would vote for me, Zach, who would vote for me, honestly, on the right or the left? Come on.
we're with Ruben Navarrete this morning, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. I want to ask you about this because you're in the media, Ruben. I think we're having a disingenuous conversation in America today on critical race theory. And here's what's leading me down that path. And I'm not an anti-media guy. I don't use the word mainstream media. But I think the media is not doing the American people fair. On this. There was a wide-ranging study of Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, a very diverse set, and an analysis of when they talked about critical race theory. 80% of the many articles looked at across diverse platforms mentioned the history of race or the way history is taught in schools. A strong majority referenced slavery. Only 10% of articles mentioned the practice of teaching against colorblindness. Only 10% of articles talked about anti-racist discrimination, such as what Ibram Kendi mentions, where you can only address past racism by current and future discrimination by current and future discrimination. Only 5% of the articles talked about schools that are implementing affinity groups. The media is not talking about critical race theory, Ruben, and it's a problem.
It's absolutely a problem, and you're right. They're skewing this debate to make it seem very harmless, but the bigger problem is that liberals, white Democrats and liberals, have been absent their AOL on this, A-W-O-L, on this issue. Example A, Exhibit A, Terry McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe, the now defeated governor of Virginia, never wanted to have this conversation. He never said what on the campaign trail, what I just said to you on this radio segment. Instead, he just said, well, critical race theory is not being taught in Virginia. Well, that's debatable, and nobody bought that, and they thought he was lying. But you have no guts, you have no courage, no moral core on the part of the modern Democratic Party, whereby white Democrats either can't defend critical race theory, or they don't understand it because they're stupid, or they have no guts because they're afraid if they defend it, they're going to come off as a racist and scare off those white voters in the suburbs that they want to get. So the bigger problem, Zach, is not that CNN is slanting this issue to make it about race and things that are, or history and things that are harmless. No, no, no. The bigger problem is that CNN is not giving voice to African-American and Latino law professors who can explain this in simple language. It only cost me 2 phone calls to put into my column expert opinion. And this may shock you, but a black law professor at Harvard, who's a Yale Law graduate and Rhodes Scholar, the guy who taught me, knows more about critical race theory than Tom Cotton from Arkansas. So it ain't hard. The experts are there. You just got to go find them.
I think, you know, I come into these conversations with you and otherwise on the air really trying to, again, dissect this cultural moment and figure out what are we actually talking about. And look, you know, I work on good housing issues, Ruben, in this community. And if you don't think that the racial practice of redlining in the 70s and 80s creates the wealth gap today, you're just not looking hard enough at all. To say that there is racism in systems and structures and in institutions, even if not current, but certainly in the past, that create where we are today, you're not looking hard enough. You can't deny that. What I think is important is that the writers of critical race theory wrote it as a questioning of, and this is a quote, Ruben, the very foundations of the liberal order, including equality theory, legal reasoning, enlightenment rationalism, and neutral principles of constitutional law. It is a revolutionary theory. It is designed to be, and I think America needs to have an honest conversation and decide if we want to have that revolutionary conversation or if we want to go in a different direction. But we're screwing up the dialogue, and I think we're talking about 3 very different things: history, race, slavery, critical race theory, Ruben, and the excesses of anti-racism in the classroom. Those are 3 different things, somewhat related. They all get looped into this thing we call critical race theory. And I think it's killing the soul of America right now because we're not having the right conversation.
I agree, and I'll give you one quick example of something that's happening with another issue that proves your point. When you say that there's a white kid and a black kid who are graduating from a high school in Tucson, and the black kid may have a leg up in going to the University of Arizona over the white kid, the white parent says, aha, that's reverse discrimination. That's not even affirmative action. That's reverse discrimination. That white kid is being discriminated against because he's white. Now, that's utter and complete nonsense, okay? Because guess what? When you show up at the University of Arizona, you see a bunch of white kids. So obviously, whiteness is not keeping you out of the University of Arizona. Having said that, what if you simply just put out an ad in a newspaper, in a black newspaper, to say, encourage people to apply to the University of Arizona? That's pretty harmless and innocuous. Is that also, quote, reverse discrimination? It is dishonest for Republicans or Democrats to short-circuit conversations like this just to win an election. and to somehow twist what something is into something it isn't. You hit on it. This is a revolutionary concept, critical race theory. But the revolution was not against white Republicans in Arkansas. The revolution was against white liberals in the Northeast who believe somehow that we could just ignore race as if it were an affliction. I like Zach. You know, he's missing two arms, but I really like the guy. No, you're not missing two arms, okay? The fact that you're black or Latino or whatever, don't do me any favors by ignoring that, you know, as if you're willing to look beyond the third eye I have on my forehead. So that's the problem. It's this color blindness was right to be challenged. But let's be clear about this. If anything, the Republican Party should be reveling in the fact that white liberals are being challenged. Instead, the Republican Party has made this into Willie Horton, you know, part two.
Ruben Navarrete has been our guest. Ruben, I could talk with you probably about this for the rest of the hour. We'll keep unpacking this even as we, I think, opened up a can of worms. I got to let you go. I'm getting the hairy eyeball from Matt on the other side of the glass. We need people willing to take issues that have become food fights and turn them back into the principal debate and discussion they deserve. That's how we get out of this mess that we're in on multiple fronts in our local and national community, Ruben. That's how we broach this topic of critical race theory. Thank you for your research.
Good for you, Zach. Good for you, Zach. Exactly right. Good
for you. I'm following your lead, Ruben. Ruben in the Center is your podcast. You make the right and the left think, and sometimes thinking makes people angry, but that's the right reason to do it. Ruben, where can people go find your work as we let you go?
You know, RubenNavarrete.com. I write a lot for the Daily Beast. You mentioned my podcast on all apps. It's called Ruben in the Center. Find me there.
Ruben, I appreciate you talking to Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks.
We'll be right back after a short break. Momentarily, Kevin Gillette, the Arizona Commerce Authority, is on the other side for a wide conversation on economic development, workforce retention, and more here in our region. Don't go anywhere on Tipping Point.
Real issues with real people. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, 1030 The Voice.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk, or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, fresh off of a conversation. We pushed it as far and as long as we could with Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. You may have read his work in USA Today, Daily Beast, Washington Post, seen him on Fox, CNN. He's been everywhere from his perch in Southern California talking about the national issues of the day. We get to have him as a regular contributor. Ruben in the Center is his podcast, approaches the issues from the middle, and calls out both sides of our American political heart where needed. I think that's a valuable thing to do. And good conversation. Catch it on the podcast. Real quick, this segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger. They opened downtown on October 20th. Little Love Burger is serving up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream, milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. You can follow them for their opening and closing hours and more on social media at Little Love Burger. Again, always appreciate good men and women starting businesses in Tucson. Love to support their launch. We're going to go chat with Kevin Gillette in a minute, Arizona Commerce Authority. A long segment on purpose with Ruben Navarrete about critical race theory. Again, my interest is not to be a part of the food fight around this. I wouldn't touch it if I was in it for that, and I'm not. Look, we are having some crucial conversations in America today. And I think we're having disingenuous conversations. Conversations that during a 24/7 political cycle, we are having disingenuous conversations about difficult topics for political expediency. I don't think there's any way that you can look around it. And I think on critical race theory, we need to have an American conversation about what it actually is and whether it is something that we want to pursue as a nation to address some things of the past going into the future. But we're not having that conversation because we are disingenuously combining many, many things under a three-word umbrella. And I think there's a lot of smart people who know better who are keeping those disingenuous conversations going on because it's politically expedient. So again, I'm a bullishly local show. I touch national issues very, very cautiously, very, very selectively. But as you know, I'm also thinking about what is going on in America's political, social, cultural, community heart. This is a moment in American history. We get these every, 30, 40, 50 years? These go in cycles. We're in one of those cycles. We think about COVID. We think about Black Lives Matter. We think about anti-racism. We talk about critical race theory. We talk about the moment we are in where we are debating once again, what is the role of government and how big or how little. We've been here before. None of this is unprecedented, including a global pandemic. We've been here before. But we need people to look at the culture and to parse it and to try and bring principled debate and discussion back to the table. Well, we're just going to destroy ourselves from within. That's how it happens. And you can win an election or two off of that, but it doesn't help your country. It doesn't help your community. And that is where I selectively touch on these issues. Listen back to that interview if you missed it with Ruben Navarrete. And as always, zyenser@gmail.com is my email. You can shoot me an email for your thoughts on that conversation offline, and we'll continue it there. We're going to go to our bottom of the hour break. When we come back, Kevin Gillette will be with us, the Arizona Commerce Authority here in Tucson. We'll talk about Tucson and Southern Arizona's local economy, a workforce and talent base that makes companies want to come and stay. How are we doing there? And more. First time the ACA is on the show. I'm excited about it. We'll do that on the other side. 10:30, The Voice. Tipping Point returns in just a minute. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Life isn't about money, but how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, coming to you live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and looking forward to our upcoming conversation now through the end of the hour with the Arizona Commerce Authority. Kevin Gallette is with us, the Vice President of Business Development, and here in Tucson. Kevin, good morning to you. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And again, this conversation is brought to all of us today by our colleague Devin Underwood at the Talent Store, your recruitment and hiring partner right here in Tucson. A Tucson company understands the workforce and the economy here, using the power of connection to get the right people in the right seats at your company. Kevin, I want to first get your thoughts. You're part of the Arizona Commerce Authority. When companies are coming to you here in Arizona and you're pointing them to Tucson, give me the quick pro-con chart you map for these companies, reasons why it's great to be here, and then what are some of the challenges that businesses tell you they have when they look to set up shop in Tucson, Arizona?
Yeah, that's an excellent place to start. I've been doing economic development for, 27 years in several different markets. I've been here in Tucson for about 2.5 years, and really enjoy it. And I think, this past 2 years, as you know, Zach, has just been, it's crazy. And I think it's really caused companies to kind of step back and look. So, to me, what we try to say is, you can have that balance. I think that, Tucson is still, a big small town. We have the amenities, we have the intimacy, if you will, that the workers want. And I think employers are starting to recognize that. I think, we read in the paper about large projects going to Phoenix, and they're hitting home runs, like speak. It's always good to be able to hit doubles every day. And I think that's what Tucson does very well, because it's a smaller market, obviously, than Phoenix. But at the same time, I liken this to like an Athens, Georgia. You have a tier one research university and a pretty, small town, if you will. And I think what that does is that really attracts people to come tap into that talent. When you look at the amenities we have, like with the tech park, and you look at what UACI is doing with the number of startups, that shows outside companies that there's a lot of talent here and entrepreneurial spirit. And I think that's something that we pitch when we talk to companies about the difference between Tucson and Phoenix. I had a broker telling me one time that, when they look at California companies, they say, hey, look, if you're used to being in L.A., Phoenix is perfect for you. But if you're a Bay Area company, culturally, kind of that entrepreneurial spirit, if you will, then Tucson should be on your radar. And that's kind of how we pitch Tucson, is kind of, when you need strong, engineering or optical sciences, there's no better, talent pipeline than coming out of U of A. And, the flip side of that is the challenge is the companies that come down here, they need access to markets. Our infrastructure, we're strategically positioned, but at the same time, quite frankly, if it's an international company, they want to have an international airport where they can walk in and fly home in as little stops as possible. But, you know, I think we're catching up with a lot of that simply because through organic growth that's happening here, companies expanding and growing here. And I think that helps attract when they start needing suppliers and they start needing things like that, that they can start reaching into their network to pull people closer to them, which, again, will help create more jobs.
That's a great segue to, you know, a major question I wanted to ask you today, because I hear this from a lot of folks in the economic development business in Tucson and Southern Arizona. They say something like this: talent drives all market decisions when a company is looking to locate and grow. The kind of point that's been made often is, yes, companies are looking at road quality, at schools, at safety. I mean, all of those things are what I'm told are conversations that are had in the boardrooms, but the top conversation is that whether a company thinks that they can keep and or find the workforce they need in Tucson is a big piece of whether or not they make that leap to either grow here or come here. Are you able to validate that? Is that talent pipeline a huge part of the conversation?
Absolutely. You know, think about this. If you're a CEO and you're charged with expanding your business, and they say, okay, we're going to give you, you know, $100 million in capital to go, you know, find us another location, you're going to be making a 25, 30-year decision. So, you know, you're looking at a snapshot in time and saying, okay, I need, you know, 100 engineers or 100, you know, optical scientists for us to make this venture work. But what's behind that? You know, where is, you know, let me, you know, extrapolate that out for a 20-year cycle or whatever on that facility. And how do I know that you know, I can grow the talent? Because I think that's more important to me. That's where, you know, companies want to be part of the solution in a community. I mean, you know, I'm not being, you know, thinking that all companies are altruistic like that, but their business case for making that investment is they want the community to be successful. They want the community to help, you know, organically grow those folks that will come and work for them in 15 years. I mean, you have kids. There's companies that want to know how your kids are being educated, what they're being exposed to, how they're being taught, so that, you know, that they can kind of grow into, okay, we have, you know, a deep, you know, a good pool of potential that can come to work for us. So, you know, I had a conversation with some of the folks over at Raytheon, and, you know, you see companies like that, and they are tremendously integrated in this community. I mean, they support a lot of things behind the scenes that people don't know about, but they are investing in Tucson, and for selfish reasons, because they want to be able to keep that talent here, to know that, you know, Raytheon is an integral part of this community, and that there's opportunities for them, and you don't have to just go to U of A to be able to come work for them. So that to me is yes. Now the other side of that is we can have the most attractive workforce in the country, but if we don't have places to build buildings for companies to actually physically go into a space, then that's a challenge. But you know, I've been like I said, I've been doing this for a long time, and it's cyclical. I can tell you, when I first got in the business, it was like, you know, you go chase the big manufacturer, you know, you go hunting the white elephant, you bring him here, it's great, and it, you know, might take 18 months or 2 years, and you know, great. You know, the time for us, the turnaround time now is, you know, weeks. Companies are making decisions, you know, that quickly. They've already done their due diligence, but where they're going to go, you know, that timeline has shrunk considerably, and it is. They want to go where the talent is.
Kevin, last question. We'll take a break, and then I want to ask you a few nuts and bolts elements of this. But are you hearing, this kind of sets up my first question of our second segment, are you hearing, as you interface with these companies who come to you at the Arizona Commerce Authority, Kevin Gallette, by the way, is with us, he's the Vice President of Business Development and is here in Tucson, when you interface with these companies, are they saying, man, we would love to have this kind of workforce available? We're not really seeing that available at scale in Tucson, so, you know, maybe we'll talk to you in a couple of years. We'll take a pass right now. Is there a, you know, is it cybersecurity professionals? Is it engineers as examples? Is there a subset of the workforce in Tucson that we need to be developing here that we just don't have?
That's a $64,000 question, Zach. You know, I'll be honest with you that the projects that we have are really all over the board. But I'll tell you, Arizona is really being, you know, recognized now for, you know, electric vehicles, semiconductors. So we're starting to have those conversations now. And that's something that we can talk a little bit about specifically with the semiconductor industry after the break, of what Arizona and the Commerce Authority is doing. But I think it's really all over the map, quite frankly. But, you know, for the production worker, you know, there's some basic skills they need. You know, for the professionals, yeah, everyone needs an engineer. I look back and think I should have been an engineer, and I wouldn't have trouble finding a job, and a very good one, because they are in high demand.
Kevin, that sets up my first question of part two of our conversation perfectly, so I want to leave it there. We'll go a tad early to our first break of this conversation, last break of the hour. When we come back, that's where we want to pick up. I want to talk about this thing we call workforce pipelining. Maybe we can de-jargonize that a little bit. And also talk about our workforce development programs that could be or need to be in place to partner industries with the workforce that they do need. We're talking with Kevin Gallette this morning, the Vice President of Business Development, Arizona Commerce Authority. We're talking about Tucson and Southern Arizona's economy and the talent we need to grow and thrive in this region. We'll be right back after a short break. Join us for part two in just a minute.
Trusted local news and talk all morning on 1030 The Voice.
What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at storytellerpr.com to learn more. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson. Located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, Hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
After you finish listening to The Tipping Point, listen to my show, The Hugh Hewitt Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right here on 1030 KBOI The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Part two of our conversation this morning with Kevin Gallette, the Vice President of Business Development for the Arizona Commerce Authority. He's here in Tucson and a part of the effort to sell Tucson to companies who are looking to grow and expand in Arizona. Kevin, I wanted to ask you a question, and you teed it up really well before we left for a break, and that is this. One example that I think could be a model for our region is what I understand Arizona State University has done over a period of years. They kind of looked 5, 10, maybe 15 years down the road, and they said, look, we want these kind of companies to look at the Phoenix area. We know that these kind of companies, and we now know who those companies are going to want engineering talent. And so they took the foresight to grow the engineering school, and say, look, we're going to pump out thousands of more graduates with great engineering degrees to be ready for these companies and to say to these companies, look, you need the talent. We have the talent. And my question is two-part for you, Kevin. What can we do to follow that model? And what are we doing currently to follow that model? Tell us about programs that partner industry sectors with workforce development programs, and maybe cast a little vision for what this region could even do to improve on that, to make sure that companies who are looking at us are confident that they have that workforce pipeline they need.
Well, and you start off with a good example. You know, ASU was very strategic, and you know, now they have 25,000 engineering students every year. U of A, my understanding, they've grown. We're right at about 5,000, which is moving up. And I know, I think recently I read that Dr. Robbins is, you know, looking at we need to bolster our engineering program. And I think that, you know, that's promising. And I think, you know, if you think moving state governments like moving a battleship, I think academia sometimes is just as challenging. But you know, I'm excited to see that U of A is kind of taking that to heart and saying, you know, we need to be more strategic, and you know, we have tremendous programs that we offer that ASU doesn't. But I can tell you that from the economic development side, is that, you know, everyone plays well in the sandbox when it comes to attracting talent and companies here. So very, very, that's what makes Arizona so strong, quite frankly. One of the things that we do at the state level is, you know, and I'm not sure if you're familiar, that we created what's called the Arizona Advanced Technology Network. And that's really kind of helping our manufacturing companies, you know, as we move to more automation and things like that, that you know, the workers have to have, you know, more skills. And so, you know, that's a partnership between, you know, Maricopa County, the Central Arizona College, and Pima Community College is a part of that. And so, you know, the whole thing to do is to your point, when companies say, where am I going to get the talent? Where am I going to get the pipeline? Interesting program that's here that's local, when you talked about engineering, yeah, they're going to come hire engineers. Pima County developed a program that works with Caterpillar. And basically what it was is the engineers were designing parts and things like that out in the field, to be put in the field. And the field workers, you know, with heat, cold, stuff like that, sometimes they wouldn't fit. So the frontline worker was having trouble with what was designed. And so Pima Community College is working with their engineers that are hired by Caterpillar to, you know, kind of so-called, you know, do tests with the frontline workers. So kind of this full integration, which, you know, is you know, I talked with Ian Rourke the other day, and he's getting calls from all over the country saying, hey, how did you develop that program? Mm-hmm. We'd love to talk to you about that. So, and then another initiative through the ACA is what we call our Drive 48, which is really kind of putting, you know, how do we work on, to your point, pushing that pipeline so it's not just, you know, coming out of the university. It's across the whole spectrum of the workforce that you need. Is how do we skill up those workers so that they can be employable and that companies come here. You know, what can we do down here? I think we've got a really good foundation for economic development here. We're continuing to grow. You know, we've had some big successes. I mean, I mentioned Caterpillar, you know, their world mining division is headquartered here, Hexagon Mining. And it's funny when you look at that, if you go to those places, you think, oh, mining, what does it matter? The technology is what's driving kind of that, you know, that industry right now. And they're coming here because, you know, we have one of the better mining schools and mining technology schools in the country, as well as, you know, like I mentioned before, with the Wyatt College of Optical Sciences and how that's integrated over, you know, pretty much every technology base. So, you know, I think that we're getting there. You know, we've had a strong region for a while. You know, our strategic location has provided us those successes. But I'm encouraged just by the simple fact, and again, I've been here a short time, but I've heard the stories of sometimes U of A was kind of insular and kind of looked in. But, man, they're out there. I think that the leadership at U of A is really taking to task about how can we be a driver in the community. You mentioned, you know, like the tech parks. expanding and the refinery coming out of the ground. I mean, those are proactive, bold statements from a university to say, we want to be part of this. And it's very strategic, like you said. ASU did that about 20 years ago. So I'm encouraged that, you know, we have such a strong partner. And from the state's perspective, that's what we sell. We sell our two tier one universities in a state the size of Arizona, the population of Arizona. It's pretty, you know, significant. And, you know, I think it's paying dividends when you see us being ranked as one of the top states to invest in, and people are moving here. And it's you know, that's a major factor in my mind, is having U of A being that partner and being kind of that player to help us all move forward.
We're with Kevin Gillette this morning, the Vice President of Business Development for Arizona Commerce Authority. And, of course, this conversation is brought today by our friend, the Talent Store, your recruiting and talent matchmaking partner right here in Tucson. Our colleague Devin Underwood is also our guide for these conversations. And Kevin, appreciate you being on. And I think it's interesting, you know, when we talk about, you know, the ASU model, I'm fascinated by this thing called the New Economy Initiative, which highlights ASU for engineering. But they highlight the U of A for something very different. And they say, look, y'all are great at mining, optical sciences, health sciences, aerospace, defense, and space technology. Those are the clusters that the state is funding our universities to focus on. That's it. And I wonder if we look at those things and say, look, this is the talent that we need around these clusters. Let's start that 5 to 10 year process of pipelining the workforce and educate around that. I think of what Pima Community College is doing with Too Simple, where they sit down with Too Simple, the autonomous trucking company, the driving company for trucks here in Tucson, and say, look, how do we develop a specific certificate program to up-level the skill of your workers for autonomous vehicles? And speaking of moving fast, Kevin, they moved fast. I think it's an ideal model for how we partner industry sectors with workforce development programs.
Yeah, and you know, there's a program that we have through the ACA, which is called the Navigator Program, and it's exactly what you said, where companies can kind of come in and say, hey, here's what I need. I'm going to need, you know, 100 of these types of workers. And we do that through no cost. We assist with them to kind of screen workers. But also, like I said, when we have these networks with community colleges, is, you know, those are some of the first people I have at the table with me when I'm talking to the company and saying, okay, let's talk about what your needs are. What are programs? Here's our current programs. And to your point, I mean, the Too Simple model is now, again, I've talked to Ian several times, and he's presented this a lot, that at Pima, people are calling saying, how did you do that? And to me, that is, you know, we talk about U of A and the talent and the higher education talent and the innovation of what they're doing. But, you know, the engine that runs this community is Pima. I mean, because not everyone's coming out of U of A's engineering program or biolife sciences or their aerospace defense. But there's people working at Raytheon who didn't go to U of A or not an engineer, but they got training at Pima Community College. And so that is, you know, we are blessed that, again, smaller community than Phoenix, but the same programs and accessibility to training through Pima that you would find up in Maricopa, which has, you know, I don't know how many campuses they are. It's a massive community college. But Pima is doing very much the same, if not better, programs for our companies than you see in Phoenix. And I think that that's another gem of ours, if you will, here in Tucson, in the innovation that they're doing. I mean, traditionally, like I said, I've been doing this for a while. Traditionally, it was, you know, and they're important, don't get me wrong, but traditionally it was either a nursing program, you know, a certificate program in, you know, auto mechanics or some utilitarian type skills. But now you look over there, you know, with the technology that they're doing, and it's and as I always joke, again, I'm older enough, you can say, well, it's not your parents' community college anymore. I mean, it is an engine that is driving and producing talent every day, that our companies that are here are able to expand and grow and be successful because having access and the accessibility of the programming and the ability to create their own programs, if you will, with Pima.
Kevin Gallet, I'm afraid if I ask you another question, I might have to interrupt you, and I hate to do that. It's a common refrain on the show. Could jam on this for a while, but you've given us a lot of time. I appreciate it. Talking about does talent drive major market decisions when a company looks to locate and grow here? The answer is yes. We've discussed how do we pair industry needs with workforce here in a smarter way. And on a micro scale, again, that's what the Talent Store does. This conversation is brought to you today by the Talent Store and Devin Underwood and her team. If you are a company looking to make sure you have the right person in the seat that you need to move your company forward, you can reach out and schedule a conversation with Devin over at the Talent Store, talentstore.com. Go ahead and check that out. And Kevin, please keep doing what you're doing to highlight Tucson. I think the ACA often defers a little bit to the great state of Maricopa, but the north and south of the state has a lot going for it as well. And I just think we need more voices pressing that issue up front. So thank you for what you're doing.
I appreciate that, and thanks for having me. And would love to come back another time and continue the discussion. And thank you for what you do by keeping this on everybody's mind and empowering us to all to get involved to help grow
yep.
our wonderful community here in Tucson.
Kevin, I appreciate that. Will do, and catch you soon.
Talk to you. Bye.
That does it for our conversation here this Drive Time Hour on a beautiful Thursday morning in Tucson. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster after that. And, of course, we're back 9 a.m. here on Tipping Point on 10:30 The Voice tomorrow, Friday, to wrap up your week. We'll see you then, Tucson. Take care.